Well, hello again, everybody, and welcome again to Jay Flemma Sports Report. I am Jay Flemma, and you are listening to the Golf News Net on iHeartRadio. Everybody, we got a terrific show for you. We're bringing in as our special guest one of the preeminent golf course architects in world golf history. He's designed on six of the seven continents. The only one he didn't design on was Antarctica, of course. He's had a terrific career as a player. And also now that we're in the middle of winter, he's going to talk a little bit about his love of skiing as well as golf. But first, to take us on a tour around the world of the new places he's been designing, please welcome Robert Trent Jones Jr.
Hi, Jay. I hope you're doing well. I'm in Hawaii as we speak, so we don't have too much of that cold winter weather that requires snow. And otherwise, you can't ski, but you can water ski here, but not snow ski.
Well, I'm sure that you're going to make the best of both as you've done both. But since you're in Hawaii, why don't we start our little world tour of where you've been designing lately at right in Hawaii at a course near and dear to your family's heart, Princeville.
Well, Princeville itself is the 27-hole golf course, which we opened in 1972, has had a 50-year history of wonderment and attracting tourism, and even a World Cup in 1978, which gave it worldwide fame. Opened in 1992 after a 10-year period of different iterations and routings in the natural Anini stream basin of the gorgeous and dramatic scenery of the North Shore of Kauai, the Prince Course. In fact, we had three different owners. The routing changed while we reconstructed the course three times, and it has been called the Pine Valley of the Pacific because the routing of Pine Valley is so dramatic and strong and varied. So is this same course for the Prince Course. And we're doing some renovation to that course, which has been offline for the last 7 years due to ownership issues. And they're spending a fortune, basically, to renovate and help restore the course in a new iteration.
Exactly how much is a fortune?
Oh, you'd have to ask them, but I can't speak for the money, but I'd say, you know, over $20 million.
Now, when you talk about Pine Valley, the thing that jumps out most at me at Pine Valley is how the fairways are wide, but there's no rough. The fairways are as wide as the playing corridor. Are there any architectural similarities between Princeville and Pine Valley?
Well, I'm a member at Pine Valley. Having grown up in New Jersey, I had the great privilege of playing there in my high school days. And Jerry Barnett and I, we were competing rivals and the better young junior golfers in New Jersey at the time. And they made us honorary members when we were 18. We couldn't pay any dues. And they said we didn't have to until we were 35 and we could decide if we wanted to stay on. I did. I think Jerry didn't. And then in my older age, they've been kind enough to make me an honorary member again. So I love Pine Valley. I love it as an architectural wonder. And you're right that there's not much rough there. It's just wastelands of sand. And that makes it beautiful and for an inland course, as well as the pine trees, which have grown up considerably since it was originally built with Mr. Crump and other architects, particularly Harry S. Colt helping him. In any event, the thing about Pine Valley is the rooting. It follows the land for the most part in a beautiful inland heathland structure. It wanders in strong directions. And Mr. Crump wanted no hole to be similar to another hole. And he wanted the course to be very difficult, much like Oakmont. That was a period of time where challenge was interesting to the golf world. So each hole plays to very wide fairways, very large, almost rectangular or square greens, and then no rough, as you mentioned, or very little rough, and lots of wastelands and trees to confront you if you're too far offline. But the great thing about Pine Valley is the rooting itself. It wanders over the landscape, and no hole is like any other hole. Each hole has its own unique challenge and the puzzles you have to figure out every time you play it.
So tell us then what your thoughts were as you were routing Princeville, and what are the iconic features of Princeville? And then after that, tell us, what did you change in this latest iteration?
Well, we're still in the process of the Prince course. Princeville is a 27-hole distinct project from the Prince, which is now being renamed the Prince's North Shore Reserve. So we have to keep each of the ownerships are different, and the way in which they're going to be used will be somewhat different, we are told. But the Princeville course is 27 holes of extraordinary beauty on the seaside of Kauai at its north shore, overlooking the Hanalei Bay and the wonders of the dramatic sea where great ocean meets great land, great golf can happen. But it's a lovely course. It's not that difficult. It was built in the 70s to attract resort players, and it does. But it also protected the land, and it's a part of a master plan community, which at that time was unique. In the days in the late 60s and early 70s, the idea of a unique organic community rather than the extension of a city took place in Florida, in Southern California, in Palm Springs, and in Arizona, and in the Hawaiian Islands. So we've got 50% of the housing area of 1,000 acres and 50% open space, which is a 27-hole course at Princeville. Whereas at the Prince course itself, the second course that was built after the success of Princeville, it's really a wandering rooting through very dramatic scenery down in the Anini Stream Basin. The Hawaiians had a name for the natural, from the clouds down the waterfalls through the land, the aina, to the reefs as one unit, and they called it Aupoa. So that's how they lived in the days preceding Europeans coming here, and they survived very nicely with the natural wonders, and they had fish in the sea, fruit on the trees, and each other, and what else did they need? So this Aupoa is very, very historic, and we're respecting it and making sure that the natural wonders and that the way they function will happen in the newly resigned North Shore Preserve.
So let's start our sojourn around the world then. We can either go west to east or east to west, but take us around the globe in the projects you're working on presently or may have just recently completed for people to go see.
Well, as we all know, we all had a little bit of a break during the pandemic time, and I spent my time with my family here in Kauai. We were very fortunate. We were on an island. It was isolated. I spent a lot of time playing golf and going to the beach and hanging out with my grandchildren and made deeper friendships, which were already pretty good, with a lot of people on the golf course. Golf is a no-touch sport, so we were able to do that, as well as swimming in the ocean was all permitted. So we were very fortunate and very healthy. During that time, the golf world also suddenly flourished again, and people were playing golf. And so while the golf had been in decline, according to the Harvard Business School types, it actually is now numerically way up. I always said it's not the number of golfers who are the way they should count the data. It's the number of golf balls that they sell, because that tells how many rounds are being played in one fashion or another. And I think that the courses that we've been renewing of our own courses, such as in McCann, Idaho, that were let go in 2010 due to the post-2008 kind of recession, we're now restoring. That's one in Idaho. We're doing the work we just mentioned at Princeville, at the North Shore Reserve Prince course. We're remodeling our own courses in places like Century World to prepare for this year's
U.S. Senior
Men's Open, right. Mm-hmm. And outside our country, where we're doing work in Ecuador, fortunately, my partner Bruce Charlton has spent most of the time there. It's just nine holes are already being played. We did a brand new course in Vietnam, which I enjoyed very much, called Hoi An, north of near the ancient city of Hoi An. And it's a kind of a tropical lynx right on the ocean, on the sea, and it's gotten rave reviews and even an historic even a accolade from the Scottish for being very environmental. We're working elsewhere in other foreign countries, and we're about to start a new course in Grenada in the Caribbean, and also in Egypt and nearby that in the Middle East, minor projects there.
Now, that was a bit of a space shuttle whirlwind orbit around the globe. Let's take a jet and do a little jet setting. Let's start with McCall. Tell us about McCall, Idaho.
Well, McCall, Tamarack is the name of the project, was a great concept in the early 2000s. It is a ski area. It's about 2 hours north of Boise, Idaho, in the mountains of Idaho by car, 2 hours north. And they had a ski area on a large lake. There's an active private airport nearby. And it's a little known location, but you may be aware, Jay, that Idaho has become a fashionable place for people who are escaping California and want to have some similar lifestyle that they may have enjoyed in certain parts of California, like Orange County. They're going to Idaho. And they've always been going to Idaho, to Sun Valley, for skiing and for recreation. But they're actually living in Boise and in McCall and in northern Idaho for the total lifestyle. So now we built the golf course in 2006. It was named the best new course of the year by Golf Digest panel. And then in 2008, as we all know, there was a recession. And by 2010 or so, it went through bankruptcy and it was mothballed for a while. And just now we're restoring the golf course, which had been let go, modifying it, updating it, and adding a few little fun things to what was already good rooting.
What are some of those fun things?
Okay, I forget the whole number now because we changed the numbers, but I mean, I think it's the third hole. There was a par three played across into an island green in a grassy meadow, not like the island green of TPC or its predecessors in Ponte Vedra, but a kind of a grassland meadow, either, you know, it's death or glory. You're either on the green or you're lost in the marsh. And we added a second green to the right of it, so you could play a landform if you're timid, and depending on how the operation sets up where the flag sticks of the day are. That's new. Some of the holes in the inland forest areas where eagles nest have been respected, but some new homes are integrated into them. And so we've changed the bunker patterns and restored and refined some of the shot making qualities in those dense forests. Those are new.
Now, you also mentioned Century World, which will be hosting the U.S. Senior Open this year. For people who aren't in the know, tell them a little about where it is and the history of the golf course and what we can expect to see for the Senior Open.
Well, Century World is one of my favorite projects. It was way back in the early 1980s, John Jonas, then the chairman of the insurance company Century World, wanted to make Stevens Point, Wisconsin, in the north woods of Wisconsin, a few hours north of Milwaukee, an attractive place for people of actuarial skills to come. So he built a brand new office building and wonderful recreational facilities to attract those skillful accountants and actuarials that the insurance companies need. And they came. The lifestyle was a small town, but the recreational facilities and the food was first serve. It was, you know, highest order of things. So the golf course itself is a low-lying, relatively two-dimensional course with beautiful man-made lakes in a natural woods. And it's a core golf course. There's no housing on it. So when you're there to play golf, you're there to play golf. And he wanted at that time to upgrade things like the cart paths are woven in such a way you don't see them. But if you do see them, they're kind of a rouge color. They're not asphalt and they're not concrete. The streams that run through the course naturally to these lakes, which were man-made, are rock decorated. The fairways are wide. The tees are multiple. We actually had a woman players, a woman named Kim Foreman at that time and a woman professional, come and hit golf balls backwards off the tee. Say the hole was a par four, which required on an average for a man player a drive 5-iron. They would hit 5-irons back and make a pattern to see where they would hit the ball forward from that position to use the club of the same trajectory. And then we would say, okay, anywhere 220 yards back there, you find the tee. That was new, and asking the women to help us find their own tee to have a playing quality similar to what the men had at a single digit level or better. So a lot, very flexible golf course. In fact, it held the women's junior, USJ junior there a couple of years ago. And the young women now hit the ball much farther than they did in 1980, but the course was plenty for them and to test. The course has been modified twice. Once in 2014, we expanded the routing to include these lakes in more play, which was the original routing, but was not built that way due to environmental constraints at the time. And this was the mission of our design and the mission of John Jonas fulfilled. And now it's been slightly modified by the USGA requirements for a senior open. It's a stricter examination, more narrow off the tee than the original design of wider fairways. And the one thing about the USGA, they will have greens that tuck pin positions behind a hazard, a water hazard, of which there are many here, like number 12, a par 3, and the number 5, par 5, around the lake. My philosophy is give variety, but we have plenty of variety, but also to give a strict examination of approach shots, especially at championship level. So they will be able to tuck flagstick positions behind a bunker or next to a lake, unlike the tour, which tends to avoid that. There'll be a lot more thought in the quality of the shot making of the senior men's who are playing in that championship.
And again, for those of our listeners that might not be familiar, tell us once again where the golf course is located and what year did you build it?
The golf course is in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. It's in the North Woods, the beginning of the North Woods of Wisconsin. Wisconsin, to me, is a golf mecca. You've got the courses that held the Ryder Cup recently, the Pete Dye design, and you've got a new course at Sandhills, and you've got other courses in the capital that are excellent at the University of Wisconsin at University Ridge, as well as traditional private clubs. Wisconsin has a lot of great golf. Now, one thing that you do have at Century World, which I didn't mention, is the Flower Hole. At that time, John Jonas...
Yes, the Flower Hole.
Right.
John the Jonas, much maligned, much discussed, much stopped and smell the roses flower
hole. Right, stop and smell any flower there, planted there, but don't play out of them, just smell them, because you get banned for life if you choose to play out of them. Anyway, the idea was that John wanted excitement in every hole, and he felt this par three, at that time it was number 7, and we changed the numbering, now it's 16, was modest. We had lake holes and we had well bunkered holes. And so he said, what do you think? And I had been in Europe and played in France, and they had some flower gardens behind Saint-Cloud's greens. I said, boy, you're French, John. Jonas is a French trapper's name that inherited from the Wisconsin heritage. And he said, well, that's good, but I had a little French taste. And I said, well, okay. So he said, I've designed you a little pond in front and a hollow. When I came back 6 weeks later, he'd filled it with flowers, not water. So John had a lot to do with the idea of taking that idea into and making it dramatic and scenic. And I said, well, John, that's all well and good, but you know, in a championship such as the USJ, you have, under the rules of golf, if your player hits it in it, and he could find the ball, he could play out of it. He said, well, we can't go against the USJ rules, but I'm going to add a chairman's rule. Should the player take his option to play out rather than drop back and play forward, he will never play my course again.
We're talking with Robert Trent Jones Jr., preeminent golf course architect, here on Jay Flemmer Sports Report, and I am Jay Flemmer. You're listening to Golf News Net on iHeartRadio. Bobby, one more quick question before we go to break. You spoke very well about Haliana Shores, but I'd like you to expound on two others that I'm looking very much forward to seeing sometime. Hogshead in Ireland and your course in Rome, Italy, along the Via Appia.
Well, You know, Rome is going to host the Ryder Cup soon, and all roads lead to Rome. By the way, all the roads do lead to Rome, and they're made of basalt. And basalt is a strong, hard mineral which sheds water. And one of those roads wanders through our course at Monte Rossi, and it still sheds water, and it's still hard and firm 2,000 years later. We respected it as an artifact. It's not used by cars, but it's a road. It's a Roman road right in the middle of the golf course. So there's a lot to be said for that. Of course, there's a short course there and a championship course, longer course. It's near Rome. And if you come for any reason to Rome, for pasta, for good wine, for the Roman experience of the great archaeological wonders, and take a chance and take a day off and go a little bit north, about an hour north of Rome, and try Monte Rossi. And of course, if you come for the Ryder Cup, by all means, go off and play Monte Rossi. It's open to the public. And I think, you know, you'll have a Roman holiday. In terms of Hogshead, it's also in Europe, and it's a beautiful location in Waterville, Ireland. Now, I'm Celtic. I'm Welsh. My name is Jones Welsh. And they keep saying, Bob, but you're really Irish. You Welsh just, you know, you're really Irish. You just couldn't swim. So I guess that's my heritage. So I got a chance to work in Ireland. And so I'll be celebrating not only St. George's Day, but St. Patrick's Day coming up this March with my friends. But Brian Marcel and his partner, Tony Alvarez of Alvarez and Marcel, great, great golf patrons, bought an old course that had gone bankrupt and had been abandoned, and added much more land, and we just started over and rooted a headlands course with a stream rushing through it, salmon stream rushing through it. So if you're a little bored, maybe, you know, bring your fishing pole and throw a line in and see what happens for lunch. Anyway, it's a Waterville. Waterville is on the southwest coast of Ireland, south of Shannon, about 2 hours, north of Cork, about 2 hours. And it's really golf land and Ring of Kerry. There is a wonderful course there called Waterville, which is a Lynx course. That's on one side of town. And we are 2 miles the other side of the Waterville town, which has a lot of history in itself. Many people would vacation in Waterville. It's worth the trip for along that coast. There are many wonderful golf courses from Shannon south toward some of those courses along the coast, all the way to Cork, the Headlands courses, and they're all good. But I think you'd enjoy Hogshead if you get a chance to play. It's a private club, but they do have ways that you can play if you call ahead.
This is Jay Flemma, and I'm here with Robert Trent Jones. You're listening to Jay Flemma Sports Report, and we will be right back after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. I am Jay Flemma, and you are listening to Jay Flemma Sports Report on iHeartRadio and Golf News Net. Before we get back into our guest, Robert Trent Jones Jr., very quickly, now that we are in February, I'm going to give you the skiing update. And it is nothing but good news, everybody. Finally, Old Man Winter decided to come out of his doldrums. And hey, nice of him to join us. Now bring it. And he is. The East Coast has finally seen resorts go from having maybe 20 to 40% number of trails open to 100%, or at least close there too. The epicenter in the last couple of weeks has been New Hampshire. In particular, places like Pat's Peak and Waterville Valley and Cannon Mountain have all had 100% trails open and seen powder after powder after powder, storm after storm after storm. There's been good news in Vermont as well, especially good news out of southern Vermont. Places like Mount Snow, Magic, and Stratton are reporting massive increases in the number of ropes getting dropped and trails getting open. And Jay Peak, of course, is leading the way on the East Coast, as it always does. And so there is your East Coast ski report. Also, everybody, keep your eyes on Maine, places like Sugarloaf and Sunday River and Saddleback, also reporting 100% round trails open. The West Coast has been paradise all winter long. And so let's get back to talking to Bobby, because Robert Trent Jones Jr. has designed no less than 15 golf courses at preeminent ski resorts, everything from Olympic venues to Powder Mountains in the west and terrific places in the east. So, Bobby, why don't you walk us through a couple of your favorite ski resorts to ski at, and then we can talk about some of your favorite places where you've designed golf courses where there have also been ski resorts.
Well, thank you, Jay. That was a really good report. You got me all excited. At my age, I don't ski as much. I don't ski at all anymore, but I go and watch my grandchildren ski and race past my son my grandson, Nate, is now jumping off cornices at 12 years old. And I panic when I see this, but the younger skiers take on risks that I wouldn't and never took on. But skiing has been a second love of my sporting life until recently. I enjoyed skiing all my life. I learned actually to ski in New Jersey. It wasn't very good. Then when I was at Yale, I would go up to Bosques in Massachusetts, and skiing in there in those locations was very different from the skiing that I learned in the far west when I moved that way. It was more like skiing on ice skates in the east much of the time. But your report just now makes me all excited to see some of those fabulous East Coast ski resorts with the snow, especially when it's fresh. And the powder doesn't last long in the east, but when it is, it's go get it. I think the places that are interesting to me personally are the Olympic venues, where we built ski golf courses for the summertime. I remember when I was working in Keystone, Colorado, at around 9,000 feet at the bottom of the mountain, elevation, maybe a little less, but the owner said, "Oh, this is a beautiful ski resort." So I would go there in the winter, make sure I took my family, and we did our design seminars during the ski era so we could ski. And he said, "We don't really want this to be a ski resort anymore. We want to make it a summer resort, which happens to have skiing. We can count on the golfers every day in the summer. Sometimes if the snow's not good, we have to make it, or we have to wait for Mother Nature to make it." So generally speaking, the resorts that are come to my mind are like Keystone and Vail at Beaver Creek. Those are courses that are summer resort at skiers. But the ones that are well known are actually Olympic venues. And they include one in Karizawa in Japan in my early career with my father in the beginning and then later with me. And I think the Olympics of 1968 was at a ski resort that had a summer golf course as well that we designed in the snow country of Japan. In Korea, Yongpyeong, from two Winter Olympics ago, has a golf course we designed about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, maybe now. And in Grenoble, France, we did a course there. That's an Olympic venue, as well as in the United States Squaw Valley. I think they had the Olympics in the 30s there, but they certainly had the skating part of it. So it must have been the whole Olympic venue. And in Canada at Blackcomb Mountain in Chateau Whistler, we did the golf course there, which we're very proud of. In fact, I kind of laid it out like a ski run. So it's a continuous 18 holes and you go out, and it's a three-dimensional course. All ski area golf courses are three-dimensional. There's a lot of change in elevation because you're in the mountains. And so then you turn around and you kind of climb up the hill in the outgoing nine. You turn around, you come back, and I set up, and you're looking straight at Blackcomb Mountain, which in the summertime has splotchy snow still on it, even in July and August. So I laid out a bunker pattern that kind of mimicked the snow patterns on the mountain in the distance. So you feel like you're skiing home on a golf course.
Your doctrine of mirroring that you're so enamored of.
Yeah. So those are some of the ones that come back, and I had, and again, Jay, you know the difference between two-dimensional golf architecture. Let's say Florida is pretty flat. So that's more two-dimensional. A lot of water. Water is even flatter. It's dead flat. And, you know, think of Pete Dye, who lived there and did wonderful golf courses there, or Tom Fazio, and even my father, and we did a few. They add things like fountains and wastelands and other things to liven up the variety of the look of the golf course. In the ski areas, you don't need to liven it up. The magnificence of the mountain is everywhere. It's like the frame of a great picture. So many people talk about the beauty of the ocean, and it is beautiful. But I also think the beauty of playing golf in the mountains is equally beautiful.
Tell us a little bit about what kind of terrain you had to work with in Japan and also in Grenoble, France.
Well, again, Japan is part of the Ring of Fire, and it's a series of, it's an archipelago, and it's a series of islands, and they're three-dimensional. I'm in Hawaii, and you know, Hawaii is very different from the Bahamas. Bahamas are islands too, but here you have three-dimensional islands. They're volcanic. And Ring of Fire implies volcano eruptions. Therefore, if you think of golf being played on the attack side of the game rather than the design side, you have to add in the third dimension of calculating how far the ball drops or rises when you make your club selection. And ironically, the ball actually goes out and sort of stops moving forward. So it's not longer, it goes out, loses its power, and drops straight down. So you can't get too much change in elevation. Like, let's say above 50 feet change in elevation, it becomes odd a little bit. You can do it, but you have to make the design of the green such that it will receive a shot, have an open entrance to the green, for example, or it's unforgiving. So having said that, in Grenoble, we had Grenoble is a town near in the Alps, and it's near some very famous French alpine skiing area, Mont Blanc, an hour away, and other famous resorts where the Olympics have been played. But yep, Grenoble, sorry,
I said yes. Why certainly?
Yeah. So anyway. It was the idea was to attract people in the nuclear power industry to come there, and they had skiing, which brought them there, but they didn't have golf. So the community invited us and others to bid on a project to make a golf course, which we think has a mountain characteristic, three dimension, changing elevation, and is quite attractive. And, you know, I guess of all the ski resort areas, I feel most happy about, of course, Maine. Sugarloaf was one of the first. It's in a wilderness in Carabasset, Maine. I had much fun with the Maine people. They're very frugal. We would meet at the site, and then occasionally we would meet in Boston. I may be coming in to go over plans. They would never hire a room to go with the plans. We went to the public library and put the plans up on the stacks. And of course, the librarian was always saying, shh, shh, but they didn't have to pay for that. So we had fun and a few Maine lobsters to go with it.
But you didn't just design Sugarloaf in Maine. You also designed Sunday River in Maine.
That's true. And we enjoyed that a lot. Some of the ads that I did with John Cleese for Titleist, which are, you know, of course, based out of Acushnet, Mass, were actually kind of mimicking some of those holes in Sunday River in the spoof that where John Cleese played the over-the-top architect and I was too conservative. So we had a lot of fun using them as a backdrop.
Now, tell us how the two courses at Sugarloaf and Sunday River differ from each other.
Well, the courses at Sugarloaf, which was done in the mid-80s, is a wilderness golf course, literally wilderness. We did not visit the land by Jeep or walk it because there were no trails. We flew over in a single engine plane, looked down in the valley, and then saw this beautiful Carabasset stream running through it. And we had a choice of thousands of acres of forest. And I said, let's run it across that in that area where the stream is, so I can make some interesting holes. And the back nine at Sugarloaf, I call a string of pearls, because starting with 10, the stream is in play, 11 clearly, 12 again, 13, 14, 15. It's a string of holes right along the fast-rushing Carabasset River, a pure mountain stream. And that's quite unique. And Sunday River, the back nine is a little more hilly, and the front nine is a little more gentler. So it doesn't have the natural stream running through it. There are some tributaries, but basically it's a scenic course. And the woods is not a wilderness. It's more of a development course.
Now, have you had the good fortune to ski at Sunday River?
No, I never did ski at Sunday River. I did ski in Carabasset. I had stronger ski legs in those days. But anyway.
I will be seeing Sugarloaf sometime soon. And happily, last year I saw Sunday River. And I have to say, what a unique place it is. Seven different peaks all side by side, continuing from east to west. And the mountain continues to develop, Bobby. Since you've been there last, they have opened up something called the Jordan Bowl, which is the westernmost expanse, and they're going to expand even further out that way. They've got a new hotel over there as well. And they have opened up something called Oz over there, which is an absolutely fabulous confluence of both gladed runs and pieced runs that are as close to skiing out west as you're going to get here on the East Coast. And of course, all of the standards like White Heat and Vortex are still steep and fast. And the snow at Sunday River is pretty much nigh incomparable. It is always very well covered, and it's always fresh, good snow there. So I highly recommend it for when your grandkids want to go skiing in Maine.
By the way, you know that snowmaking was invented in Massachusetts by Larchmont, which was a sprinkler company. And they also did irrigation. We used to buy their irrigation equipment in the 60s. But the idea of, creating snow with an irrigation system, putting out a mist and it would freeze in the air and make it into the snow, was invented in the East Coast of the United States.
Fascinating. Now, Bobby, I'd be remiss if I didn't tempt all of our listeners with the list of some of the places you've done out west, which reads like a murderer's row. Sun Valley, Crested Butte, Steamboat, Jackson Hole, and Sun River, all on top of your terrific design at Tamarack. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Crested Butte, Steamboat, and Jackson Hole?
Well, Crested Butte is on the backside of the Aspen Mountain, so by definition, it's got great snow. But it's a little bit more remote. It's very western. Bring your cowboy hat and your boots. You'll be happier than that. It's this year in Colorado, they tell me they've got this enormous, I don't know the number amount of feet, but maybe as much as 30 feet of snow in some locations in some of the areas naturally, and they're getting
it's
more.
It's been superb. It's been right. Superb.
And, the difference between the East and the West is you ski on ice sometimes in Massachusetts at Bosques, as I have done. And the West is champagne snow. It's so airy and light, particularly in Utah, to ski. And that carried through to Sun Valley. Well, right now in Sun Valley, the skier, everybody that's been skiing there tells me it's magnificent. And in Jackson Hole, it's colder there. And I've skied there straight down the mountain. You got to be an A-type skier to enjoy that, and be sure you snuggle up with a good rum toddy, or at least that after you're done, and maybe some other snuggling, jingle bell type. So getting Sun Valley is our course, golf course, is not related to the ski mountain, but the Rockefeller people owned that area, and we're great benefactors to Yellowstone Park. So it's magnificent wilderness in Wyoming and a national park so nearby. So it's all fascinating. A lot of wealthy people have come into Jackson Hole recently and created their own little community and have had fun and enjoyed the high life, both in skiing and in cuisine. For me personally, I guess the place, Sun Valley, remains the place I like to go. We remodeled the original Sun Valley course done in the 30s by Harriman's. I think Billy Bell Sr. did the course. I played in a tournament there and won it twice, the Danny Thompson tournament to benefit leukemia people, people who played leukemia and baseball with Harmon Killebrew and others. Many of the people from Congress, like Tip O'Neill or Sam Nunn, during the August break would come there and we'd play a two-day round and have a lot of fun in the summertime. But you know, it's just a great, great place. And it's owned by the Holding family. And we're about to remodel our remodeling. That's the one good thing about my work. I don't mind being called back to remodel my work. And people say, why? Aren't you proud of your original work? I said, of course, but the game moves on. Things change. Fashions change somewhat. But more importantly, you should take a look at it. And I said, does a farmer actually mind milking the cow twice? I'm happy to do that. So we are upgrading Sun Valley as we speak. Part of what happens in golf courses is the trees that are there, in that case, were planted by Earl Holding. They get too dense. They need to be pruned. I personally think trees should not be wholesale slaughtered as they are doing, say, at Congressional or at Oakmont. They should be pruned and carefully managed like a good forester would do, even if they're on a golf course. So, there's so many opportunities in the far west. It's all good. I think in British Columbia, it's even better. In some cases, you can do helicopter skiing, which I've never done. We did a course in called Glencoe in Calgary on the way toward Banff and Jasper, but it's not in the ski areas, it's near the town. So there's so many opportunities for both the summer and winter sports in the far west of the United States. I try them all.
Well, Bobby, it's been fantastic to have you on the Jay Flemma Sports Report, and those of us at Golf Newsnet and iHeartRadio are equally grateful. Tell everybody where they can look up on the internet all of the things that you're working on and doing.
Well, as you know, Jay, you have been one of my friends. We were pen pals. People don't know, likes to write poetry, and so do I. So we shared our poetry experiences more than a decade ago for a lot of fun. If you want to go into my email, my website, or actually just Google it, poetryandgrass.com. It's kind of a thank you letter to life. It's not all about golf. Obviously, there's quite a bit of golf in it. It's about thank yous to many friends and experiences in life. And it's free, and you might enjoy that. If you want to buy an actual book, it's dedicated toward that one continent I haven't built any golf courses on, Antarctica, to save the krill, to save the penguins from the Chinese fishing vessels. And we're trying to raise a little money for the upcoming expeditions there to highlight that concern. So anyway, enjoy yourself. Poetry, poetryandgrass.com. And you can see what I've been doing. And I use the pandemic both graphically and poetically to thank many of my friends, including you, Jay.
All right, everybody. We will catch you next time on Jay Flemma Sports Report. And right now, we are going to go right back to Ryan Ballingy. Thanks, everybody, for joining in.